Good evening, everyone. My name is Savannah, and I want to welcome you to this live event, and I'd like to thank everyone for joining us this evening. Tonight, Senate Minority Leader Jay Costa of the 43rd District will be taking your calls as he discusses some victories in the 2025-26 Pennsylvania state budget. Senator Costa will also be taking questions directly from you on this topic during our discussion. If you have a question and would like to join our conversation tonight, please press star 3 on your keypad, and we'll get to you when we can. So without further delay, I'm going to hand it over to Senator Costa. Over to you.
Thanks, Sab, and good evening, everyone, and thank you very much for joining us for another one of our telephone town halls. We find these to be very helpful and informative in terms of shaping policy here and bringing back your concerns and questions that you have on our efforts here in Harrisburg. Tonight, we want to talk about some of the very positive aspects of the 25-26 general appropriation budget. And talk about some of the policies that were initiated and some of the investments that were made. Let me start by talking about some of the key investments that were made in this budget as it relates to education. Always one of the primary issues that Senate Democrats advocate for, and as leader of the caucus here, I'm very proud of the work that we've done again this year with regard to investments in education. As it relates to basic education funding, we allowed for an increased spending by $526 million. As it relates to the adequacy requirement that we have based upon our Commonwealth Core ruling a couple years ago that required us to address the adequacy nature of funding for basic education and also looking at the constitutional aspects of how we fund our schools. Another thing that's important there is special education, which has always been a high priority in properly funding in that space. We added an additional $40 million for special education. We also know that we have an issue in securing sufficient number of teachers. And we know that the student-teacher program in our universities and colleges is really important to make certain that we have that pipeline of good educators. A couple years back, Senate Democrats established what's referred to as the student-teacher stipend that allows resources for our student-teachers to be able to deal with the expenses they have with traveling to and from and providing the resources they need to be good student-teachers and helping them along those lines. The program had grown from $10 million the first year to $20 million last year. And this year we add an additional $10 million to get to $30 million. That will assist 3,000 student teachers this upcoming year, which is really helpful along those lines. And we think the need is far greater than that, quite frankly. And we want to encourage people to participate, and this makes it easier along those lines. There are a couple other areas that we did with respect to education that we're going to continue to build upon. One of the most notable is relating to school district expenses. So in addition to helping our school districts with resources, as I mentioned in the basic education funding, we also did a basic ed line item, an additional $100 million that went to all 500 school districts in some fashion. And each of the school districts with regard to the adequacy, there are about 330 or so that received a significant portion of that 526, and other school districts across the state received a much smaller portion based upon how much they're already spending on education. In other words, they're meeting the adequacy levels that were set by the Basic Education Funding Commission. But in addition to that, we have 500 school districts who are sharing in a $100 million expenditure as well. So, in fact, school districts are receiving the 526 from the adequacy tax equity piece, $100 million from the basic education line item, $40 million from students, $40 million for special ed, an additional $10 million for a total of $30 million. In the student-teacher stipend. Those are some of the education pieces that were there. There's one large one as well that helps school districts deal with their expenses, and that is the expense related to charter schools. One of the areas that has been great concern about is related to cyber charter schools, and the issue has arisen that not only do they have a significant number of reserves, and there's some who question the amount of brick-and-mortar type things they need to deal with as it relates to the formula. Make a long story short, last year we invested in supporting our school districts with support for helping them offset their costs with a grant to them, offsetting their costs to cyber schools. This year we're taking a different approach and we're modifying the formula. The modification to the formula will end up resulting in school districts across Pennsylvania saving $175 million. That's one of the things we felt was very, very important. So that'll help our school districts maintain their ability to keep their taxes low going forward. So that's just the education space. There's a number of other areas where we were very successful. One of the things that I was very happy to be able to strong advocate for related to a new concept called the Earned Income Tax Credit. something that we felt was extremely important, and we worked to be able to accomplish that. Earned Income Tax Credit is a tax credit program at the federal level that allows families to take advantage of the tax credit along those lines. In Pennsylvania, we are now saying that if you already receive an earned income tax credit at the federal level, which could be up to $6,000 or $7,000 or maybe more for a family, that you have an automatic 10% tax credit in Pennsylvania. So that's going to result in about 75,000 households in Allegheny County alone having access to this additional tax credit. The total amount is about $193 million in tax savings to taxpayers in Allegheny County. Across Pennsylvania, I apologize. Something that we think is extremely important. So if you're one of those individuals or know someone who utilizes the Earned Income Tax Credit, you'll be able to, at the federal level, you'll be able to automatically have that at the state level. And that could result in anywhere from a $200 savings at the state level up to $800. So it's a very significant saving along those lines, and we're excited about. There are a number of other areas that we talk about in the budget. I think what I'd like to do, Sav, is maybe get into some other questions. But those are two of the priorities that we were very proud of, education investment as well as addressing the Earned Income Tax Credit, or as we call it, the Working Pennsylvanians Tax Credit. So we're excited about that. It's going to benefit so many people as it relates to ability, and affordability is the issue right now, and that's what's going to be helpful along those lines. So we're going to take maybe a couple of email questions that we've already received earlier today and ask Sav to ask the questions.
That sounds good. And as a reminder for those of you who are just joining us, if you have a question for Senator Costa about the budget that we just passed, you can press *3 on your keypad, and we will get to you as soon as we can. But first, we're going to take some questions from the folks who submitted them online ahead of time. The first is from someone who asked, what happened with adult use recreational cannabis?
That's a great question. Adult use recreational cannabis continues to be part of a conversation that has taken place here. We fully anticipate that the governor in February, when he makes his budget address, will again ask for those the ability to legalize recreational marijuana, and I do expect that it's going to be part of an outcome once we finalize the budget at the end of hopefully June 30th. But I do expect it to be the case. But right now, there's just not the will to do it right now at this point in time, particularly with our Senate Republican caucus members. But I do think we're going to be able to, given the revenue that could be generated in excess of maybe almost $500 million, we believe, I will go a long way in shoring up some of our finances here in the Commonwealth.
Thank you so much. We're going to take another question from online. Was there any money in the budget this year for mental health?
Yeah, mental health continues to be a significant portion of what we do. We did increase our budget along those lines through PCCG and various programs, as well as also sending resources to many of our districts across the Commonwealth, and providers, I should say. But, yeah, there's mental health programming in there as it relates to the PCCD program. So the answer is yes, along those lines. One of the things we did, we had another additional increase in a nonprofit security grant program. It's somewhat tied along those lines. It allows our school districts to be able to use those resources at our school district level for mental health programming. So we added, I believe, $125 million that would be $100 million of that could be used for school safety and mental health programming in our schools. This is more than just hardening of our schools, and more importantly, being able to provide the resources to provide for counselors and things of that nature to be in our schools to be able to provide support to the students as they need it. So, as well, in addition to that, we've done community-based increases in mental health programming in our communities as well through the Department of Human Services.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. We're going to take one more question online, and then we'll start taking questions from people on the call. As a reminder, if you want to ask a question, you can press *3 on your keypad, and we will get to you as soon as we can. Hannah asks, healthcare costs have gone up nearly 50%. Is there anything the government can do?
You know, we continue to advocate for enshrining in Pennsylvania law some of the parts of the Affordable Care Act, but we're not having any success to be able to keep costs down, making certain that people are able to keep their kids on the plan to 26, making sure that we're taking steps to protect those individuals who have pre-existing conditions, because we don't know what's going to happen at the federal level. As we now know right now, the federal level, the feds have taken steps to eliminate the tax subsidy to allow for lower rates. Come this upcoming year, rates are going to go up. They're going to double or maybe even triple in some instances with respect to the penny, the programs that are on the Pennsylvania's marketplace, the penny programs, we're very much concerned along those lines. In terms of making healthcare costs more affordable, we too are struggling along those lines to be able to keep costs down, and we're trying to make investments in our entities along those lines, trying to encourage our hospital facilities and making sure that they stay open. You know, keeping folks in the healthcare plan helps keep the cost down because it keeps you don't have hospitals spending enormous amount of money on uncompensated care, which end up resulting in higher premiums that are paid for by individuals who have to pay hospitals more to offset the uncompensated care. So I wish I could say we did more to help keep costs down, but we're trying to do our best along those lines in the healthcare space, and we have more work to do there.
Thank you so much, Senator. We're going to start taking questions from online callers. Again, if you would like to pose a question to the Senator about some of the things that were in the budget or not in the budget this year, you can press *3 on your keypad. And with that, we're going to go to Arlene in Penn Hills. Arlene, go ahead.
I wondered why they did not pass the COLA for retired teachers. That has been brought up, I don't know how many times over so many years. I've been retired for 25 years, and I find it's almost impossible to live on it. And my husband and I both put our own money into that program. So I'm asking, what does it take to get an increase in COLA for retired teachers?
So we, as Senate Democrats, have been advocating for that. My colleagues have introduced legislation that I've been supportive of to get it done. Unfortunately, we simply have a Senate Republican caucus that doesn't want to advance it. They're concerned about the cost impact that it would have on the pension system here in Pennsylvania, and that's part of the problem. I think the only way to get it done, and I'll be very blunt, is to change the majority in the Senate of Pennsylvania, because we will make that a priority going forward. But right now, we don't have the support of Senate Republican caucus to support and pay and pass it at this point.
Thank you so much. Next, we're going to go to Joe in Wilkes Township. Joe, go ahead. Joe, can you hear us?
Go to somebody else.
All right, Joe, going once. All right, next we're going to go to Gail in Squirrel Hill.
Yes, hi.
Hi, Gail.
How are you?
Well, thank you. How are you?
Very well, thank you. My question is regarding after-school programs.
Yeah.
I had, growing up, places to go. The kids today really have nowhere to go, and so they roam the streets until 7, 9 o'clock. Is there something we can do about that, or is that left up to the schools?
No, it's actually in cooperation with our school districts and other community groups and organizations. We did provide additional money through the BOOST program to be able to continue to support those type of programs, to provide for after-school programs and things of that nature. In a lot of different areas, they have them across the region, but there is state money that goes through PCCD in part, Pennsylvania Commission on Crime and Delinquency, to do some of that, but we have resources along those lines for that particular purpose. And I think we just need a significant more number of those, but they're out there and they exist, and we're going to continue to do that. The BOOST program is something that's been around now. I think this is the third year we've invested in it, and it's going to continue to provide funding along those lines. So they do exist in conjunction with school districts and community providers.
Excellent.
Okay, we were able to add more money to it this year.
Excellent.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Gail. Next, we're going to go to Gary in Pittsburgh.
Good evening. I'd like to know what is the status of the HEAR program, the Home Electronic and Appliance Rebates Program. I understand the funds were put on hold, so I would like to know what the status is and what's going on with that.
I believe that they are still on hold, and I think we're going to try to find ways to be able to reengage along those lines. But I think at this moment in time, they still are on hold.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Gary. We're going to take another question from online, but as a reminder, if you have a question about the budget, anything that was in it, anything that you heard in the news, you can press *3 on your keypad, and we will get to your question as soon as we can. Patricia online asks, what funds are available for business district development?
So in economic development area, I guess I would say to you this particular budget was a little bit light in that space. I mean, as I mentioned, the focus was really on investments in education and also looking at cyber reforms and things of that nature. This is not an easy budget year. We utilized about $3.5 billion from our surplus to be able to make ends meet. At the end of the day, there was very few increases along those lines. But in terms of business development, we continue to invest in a number of the community, DCD programs, the Department of Community Economic Development, along those lines. But being able to provide specific resources for businesses is something that I think we didn't do much adding to those programs that already exist. We have the small business development centers that we take time to invest in. We did put some money in historically disadvantaged communities, $20 million. We also put over $8 million and a new program that works on attracting and retaining businesses in the PA, it's called Business PA, but it was a modest sum of $8 million. And then we continue to put money, $20 million, into the Main Street Matters program. This is a program that supports Main Street-type activity with smaller grants along those lines, all through DCD. These are continuation of programs that we've already had in place, except for the new $8 million along those lines. We just put some money into the Agriculture Investment Innovation Department, the agency, Department of Agriculture and Innovation, but again, it was something that we, $10 million that we had before that we continued to fund.
Thank you so much, Senator. Next, we are going to go to James in Churchill. James, can you hear us?
Yes, I have a question about the public transportation.
Yes, sir.
Did they maintain the same funding, or did they take a shortfall in receiving any money in the new budget?
No, in this budget, we're going to get the same amount we've gotten through MAP Transit in this budget. However, we are also working to be able to create a new revenue stream to offset future cuts that will take place in about 2 years from now. As you may recall, transit funding has been a big issue here in Harrisburg. It's also tied to transportation funding as well. Port Authority or Pittsburgh Regional has proposed that they needed about $100 million to offset rising costs. Otherwise, if they didn't get it, they were going to eliminate about 35% of the bus routes. They were going to shut down services after 11 p.m. They were going to do a variety of other things. We were able to work with them, not only PRT, but also SEPTA and Southeast PA, to be able to transfer what are referred to as the Public Transit Trust Fund capital dollars, for dollars that are meant for new buses, new facilities, repairing the busway, et cetera, using some of those dollars, $100 million from there that's now being used for operating. So that starved off the cuts that we talked about that would have gone into effect this upcoming February. Those cuts are not going to happen. Those route reductions are not going to happen. But 18, 19, 20 months from now, we're going to be faced with the same situation. So we're working, trying hard to find a dedicated funding stream that will allow us to fund transit operations in the Commonwealth, as well as transportation, new roads and bridge money. We want to try to do $300 million in each bucket. Typically, when we do these things, we always do transit transportation funding together, as coupled together. So we're fighting to be able to do that, trying to identify a revenue stream to be able to pay for that. Because there are folks here in Harrisburg, Republicans, who don't want to use existing general fund dollars. They want new revenue. One of the places we've looked for new revenue would be regulating and providing a parity with respect to the tax rate on skill games, which are now in a lot of bars and taverns and other places. Regulating them is going to be very important. Right now, we get no money from them, and it's important that we get some revenue stream along those lines. And we'll take that revenue stream to put it into transit, transportation, and also into the general fund to offset our structural deficit.
Okay, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Sure.
Next, we're going to go to Angela Perry in Swissvale. Angela, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Hi, Angela.
Hello. Hi.
Yes.
Hi. I was calling because I'm concerned about how we are meeting our youth when it comes to mental health, when it comes to being able to shape the way that their education is going. Being able to find different appointments, a therapist, it's becoming to be such a problem stretched into the next year. And I want to know how we can meet some of that in our area, in the Woodland Hills area, not just at the high school where they have a relaxing area, but also in your elementary schools. We are actually forming our future. And if we're not there to assist them in building a brighter future and being able to balance and being able to keep up in school, how are we to move forward? Mental health is extremely alive, not just with adults, nor just high schoolers. It is ranging from your elementary up.
So as I mentioned earlier in the call, we were able to provide $100 million in the school safety and mental health programming in our school districts. That is something I sponsored a number of years ago and was able to get into the general appropriation budget. We continue to provide that. That is money that goes to our school districts to determine exactly how it is that they want to utilize those resources. And one of the things we were able to get, again, legislation I was able to put into that, allowed them to be able to use it for school counselors at different levels, not just the high school level, but at all the various levels as well. We also did $125 million for school facility and improvement, making certain that the environment our kids are learning is in the state. So those are two specific things that we've done. We've also done some additional money in the literacy space as well, which I think is going to be important. And then we also have the programs at PCCD, Pennsylvania Commission on Crime and Delinquency, that provide resources to community providers who are not necessarily in the school district, but they're in the community, doing after-school programs, doing a variety of other programs that they'll be able to do and work on academics, but also work on counseling for the kids as well. So those are resources that we're providing, and it's all on top of the additional resources that we're providing into our school districts here in Pennsylvania. I can tell you that, as I mentioned to you earlier, we did the resources for the through the adequacy program, and then the adequacy program, Woodland Hills School District was one of the major winners along those lines. We received a significant amount of money through the adequacy and tax equity piece that allows us to be able to be in a position to make sure that we are, you know, funding our schools adequately and properly, and that's one of the issues that took place. In the Woodland Hills District, we were able to add an additional, let me just check my books right here, we were able to add an additional $1.2 million in adequacy support. In other words, those additional dollars that are going to go into, that is the cyber savings. The $2.2 million is for additional adequacy. So between the cyber school changes that I mentioned to you, the $175 in reduction of cost, combined with the $2 million in adequacy, allows the school district to make almost $3 million in investments that they didn't have right now. They'll be able to use those resources to make investments in those type of programs that you talked about. But that's a school board decision. Many people they want to be able to hire and do those type of things along those lines.
Excuse me, I don't mean to interrupt, but I'm talking about hands-on as well, and I'm strictly concerned with Edgewood Primary and Dixon. I believe that it should be regulated to what is actually being done in those particular areas.
Well, I would share your
reference to mental health, and I would like to see the statistics.
Okay, I will share you. I don't have the statistics for that, for those two schools, which I'm very familiar with. I will reach out to the school district and ask them to be able to provide some, you know, information along those lines. But what I'm saying to you is that we've made over $100 million in investments in school districts across Pennsylvania for a mental health program, $125 million for school safety facility improvement, as well as the amount of money that's going into the school districts for the adequacy. This $2 million and the $1 million I told you frees up resources for the school district to make those decisions about how they're going to hire, who they're going to hire, to make sure that at Dixon and Edgewood and other places that they have facility or they have staffing in individual buildings to be able to support the students' mental health needs.
Thank you so much, Angela. Now we're going to go on to Joni in Park Place. Joni, can you hear us?
Uh-huh. Hi, Jay.
Hey, Joni. How you doing?
Okay. I'm interested in the what help the state is giving for the cuts in the food programs, most particularly food stamp, SNAP,
yeah,
WIC, and school meals.
So school meals will continue. School lunches or breakfasts will continue all across the Commonwealth. On the SNAP program, we are now fully funded. The governor really was really aggressive in making sure those resources got out. We paused for a little bit, but I think they are all out at this point in time. And to my knowledge, for November, we'll continue to monitor that. And the other programs, none of them received any reductions in terms of funding resources. But I know that, you know, we've got to continue to monitor. We're concerned about, quite frankly, the role that the SNAP benefits with regard to how we're dealing with the work requirements and the school requirements. That's disappointing that, you know, that part has already kicked in for SNAP recipients. And in my view, I just think it's going to be important that we continue to talk about along those lines. We did do some money in the state food purchase program, Joni. We about $11 million increase there, but also into the food markets as well. The farmers markets, I should say, as a way to help offset that. And I think, as you know, Governor Shapiro found $5 million that he sent to the food banks going forward to allow them to be able to use that when that free period where we weren't sure about the status of SNAP. But we're told that the SNAP benefits are out for November, and that's kind of where that's at. That was the biggest concern. But my, as I said, my bigger concern is the federal requirements now with regard to the recipients of SNAP. You know, it used to be if you were 55 to 64, didn't have to worry about the work requirements.
Right.
You know, now you're required. And in my mind, you could be a 63-year-old, 62-year-old widow. Now you have to go out and you're receiving SNAP benefits to support yourself. Now you got to go out and work 20 hours a week or go to, at school for 20 hours a week or volunteer 20 hours a week. A lot of folks are going to unfortunately drop off the program, and we're trying to change some of those things at the federal level, but you know how things are, Joni. Especially I know you've worked in the state for years that I know of, and it's just disappointing that that's where things are at.
So the food stamp money is a substitute for the federal money?
No. The federal money, the SNAP money is out. My understanding is out. The governor layered on and took $5 million from an emergency fund and put that out there and sent it to the food banks to support the food banks to distribute during that period of time when people were waiting the first couple of weeks in November. And then the additional money, we just added more money to the state food purchase program and also the farmers market just to be able to provide additional backstop to the SNAP work that's being done. So folks who have access to the food banks, to go to the food bank market, for example, down in the Pittsburgh Food Bank and Duquesne, on having access, and then the farmers markets all across the Commonwealth. So we just added more money into that space to be able to bolster those programs. But
what about WIC?
I think WIC is still is not nothing. We didn't add anything new to WIC, to my knowledge. I think we're maintaining the coverage that we have at this point.
But the Fed's cut it, right?
I'm not positive whether or not we've experienced those federal cuts yet or not. I have to go back and see when the implementation date of those pieces went into effect. But I'm pretty sure they haven't happened yet. I'll double back to it, Joni, and I'll let you know.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Joni. Take care.
Next, we are going to go to Olivia in Pittsburgh. Olivia, can you hear us?
Yep.
Hi, Olivia.
Yes, I'm here. Hey. Yeah, my question is, now that Pennsylvania has officially exited the regional greenhouse gas initiative, or REGGIE, is there anything in the budget that supports action on climate change? And if not, what can we expect from our state legislators to ensure that we have a livable future?
So removing Pennsylvania from REGGIE was really a difficult choice that a lot of us had to make. I was someone who consistently voted to keep Pennsylvania in REGGIE and had long, protracted fights with Republicans along those lines, and have voted probably at least four times to keep Pennsylvania in the REGGIE program. Unfortunately, we were faced with a situation where there was either no budget or allowing us to remove ourselves from the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative. There was concern that we were going to be successful at the Supreme Court level, given that the lower courts had said that we had exceeded our authority. But despite that, that case never came to fruition in the Supreme Court, so it was still lingering there. But Republicans were clear. We're not going to do a budget unless we remove ourselves from REGGIE, and that left us in a very difficult situation. There's nothing specifically in this budget other than what we've already done in that space. But what I can tell you is that it's our intent to work hard, to continue to talk about what needs to be done. Some of the things that we were able to do related, we're going to continue to push many aspects of, not all, many aspects of the governor's plan, a lightning plan, which would address some of the things that need to be done. But essentially put into place our own Pennsylvania Resi, so to speak, we're fighting for, as well as increasing some of the other programming in the portfolio standards. I will tell you that we're getting pushback from Republicans on those type of things, but I think at the end of the day, it's a high priority for us to continue. I can't tell you in our conversations and my conversations with the governor that he's committed and we're collectively committed to not leaving these issues behind. And we're going to continue to work, and he's going to continue to make energy policy in Pennsylvania a high mark of his budget address as we go forward. But those are some of the things that where we're at this point in time. But I wish I could tell you that other things were put into place to replace what was being done. But we've got a commitment that we're going to focus on energy policy in the next year's budget conversation, which begins in February.
Thank you so much, Olivia. Next, we're going to go to Mark in Wilkins. Mark, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Hi, Jay. Mark from the Jubilee Kitchen. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. How are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. Hey, thanks for all you do for the community. I think everybody needs to realize you're a real advocate for us.
Thanks.
I just wanted to see what with the Neighborhood Assistance Tax Credit Program, if there were any changes to that, if that was passed through this budget.
No, we increased it, as you know, a couple years back from 18 to 36 and 36 to $72 million. I think it's staying at $72 million right now. And, folks are – we're waiting actually for the allocation for this past year to go out. So we're keeping our fingers crossed that we'll have a good haul in that regard. But we didn't do anything, to my knowledge, along those lines. The only thing we did change in sort of tax changes related to the how we fund the Pennsylvania Tax Credit Program regarding housing. We modified the way in which we sell those tax credits. At the end of the day, it's a $10 million program. When they used to sell the credits to one format or one process, it generated about $6.5 million. The way we're going to do it now will generate about $9.2 million. So I know it's small numbers, but it adds about $3 million to affordable housing programs through PHFA, and we're happy about that. The FAIR program
right.
also stayed the same as well. We didn't increase that this year. These are all items that we push for, but given the limitations we had on our spending ability, were something that was there that wasn't being able to be done. So we didn't do a tax code this year, which we normally do, but I think when we get back to one, which I think will be next year, I think you will see some conversations around Neighborhood Assistance Program along those lines. Because that's a real community partnership with entities that are providers and also our corporations and the like working together to be able to support programs that otherwise may not find the resources. So it's something we got to continue to grow, and I know it's something that's important to a lot of neighborhood organizations.
Thanks, Jay.
Thanks, buddy.
Thank you so much. Once again, as a reminder, if you have a question that you would like to ask of Senator Costa about the budget, you can press *3 on your keypad, and we will get to you as soon as we can. Next, we're going to take an online question from Giselle, who asks, why does the budget take so long?
Well, that's a great question. I think the answer is that you had caucuses, Democrats and Republicans from each of the House and the Senate and administration, advocating for their priorities. Certainly for a long period of time, the priority of Republicans was limiting spending below a number which we thought was unsustainable and did not take into consideration the cost drivers as it related, as we talked about earlier, health care costs, for example, was a big issue. That was one of the issues as well. As I just mentioned moments ago, the Reggie conversation was something that was really a major sticking point to try to resolve through the work that was being done. That was an issue with respect that took a little while to work through. With reaching a what's called a spend number, how much money we're going to spend, as I mentioned, we also end up spending $50.1 billion. Now, the governor proposed $51.5 billion budget. We reduced that, or the legislature, we reduced that to 50.6, and we also ended up at 50.1. So we kept driving the cost associated down in terms of how much we would be spending. At the end of the day, spending within that, how we spent the money within the budget, what we put in for education, what we put in for human service programs, that was a big deal. The cost drivers on human service program, the fact that we have to provide services for the Medicaid program, and we also have a growing population in that space, generating about almost $2 billion in additional costs this year, which is really one of the major cost drivers. We were able to take some steps to mitigate against that and made some modifications in the Medicaid program with some reforms that will help us keep some of those costs down. But at the end of the day, that was a major cost driver. But agreeing upon the scope of those changes was going to be important. Agreeing upon how much money we were going to spend in education. where we're going to do things and outside of that that we just couldn't simply agree upon. Transit and transportation was one of the issues that in supporting regulating skill games, so we, as we know them, and generating revenue from the regulation along those lines was another issue that took some time to work through. We ultimately took that off the table. Similarly, we took other things off the table to get to an agreement, which is somewhat limited in nature in terms of where we started back last February.
Thank you so much, Senator. Next, we are going to go to Maria in Oakmont. Maria, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Good evening, Maria.
Good evening. So my question is around the services for adults with special needs. There's so much was said on this call, and there are questions and answers related to special ed education, support for the students with special needs. But I wanted to know specifically for the young adults with special or individuals with special needs, once they exit the school district, a lot of programs died during COVID. And those, unfortunately, are not returned to the service for the adults with special needs. So for the individuals who care for those adults with special needs, it's difficult to continue to work and provide care. Is there any budget that is carved out to support those programs or start resurrecting those programs as it was during the pre-COVID era?
So I know that we are taking steps to remove folks from the waiting list along those lines. And I think that continues to be a high priority. But unfortunately, particularly the emergency waiting list, those numbers continue to grow, and we continue to fight against that, pushing back to try to reduce that amount of money. We're continuing to do that. With regard to what I'll call the direct care workers, particularly the consumer-directed workers, we did increase the allocation by $21 million, so folks who are making the consumers are making the choice, not the agency folks. I recognize that they represent a smaller portion of the overall direct care worker universe, but there was a step in the direction that we needed to move forward on, and we did do something that's based to the tune of $21 million. Hopefully that's going to make its way to those individuals who are working with and those folks who do tremendous work and hard work in that space. Now, with respect to the rest of the universe of folks who are there, the direct care workers who work through the agencies and the like, we need to add more money to them in that space as well because they're struggling, and we're trying to find ways in which we can increase the rates along those lines. And that's something that's going to be important going forward. I do expect that, you know, I met with folks today from Vyatta, for example. They laid out what their need is in terms of what things that they're doing to try to grow the workforce, but also the need that they have and how much money is needed. It's in the several hundred millions of dollars to be able to adequately pay people to be able to perform the services that we need them to do. So we did a little bit of help in it, consumer-driven. We didn't do anything to the other folks along those lines, but we're examining that, and I expect that that'll be part of the conversation is next year.
Thank you, Maria.
So go ahead, Maria.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Next, we're going to go to Rhonda in Wilkinsburg. Rhonda, you can go ahead.
Thank you. Good evening, Senator Costa.
Evening.
And thank you for your service to our communities.
Thank you.
I'm interested in infrastructure money or money for infrastructure in that budget. Where are we with that? Specifically, I'm interested in looking at the reconstruction of several streets in the Wilkinsburg community, Grand Boulevard, Penn Avenue or so. So where are we with that, please, in terms of money and for infrastructure?
So we did not increase any infrastructure money at this point. We maintain the amount of money that we keep utilize in the motor license fund that's transferred from the motor license fund into the general fund to pay for the state police. Typically, that motor license fund is program dollars that are used for those type of things you mentioned. Infrastructure, we tried to do a transportation bill that never materialized, and we're going to continue to fight along those lines. We think that's important. Transit and transportation have always worked together and gotten resources together, but that hasn't happened yet at this point. Republicans want a new dedicated revenue stream towards that end, and we don't simply haven't identified that yet. We have come up with some ideas to that they haven't accepted at this point. I can tell you that the grant programs that we provide, you mentioned Streets in Wilkinsburg, I know Haytree, we've done a lot of work on, working through what's referred to as the multimodal transportation program, where we found funding for Wilkinsburg to do investments along those lines. We have Main Street Matters, which I talked about, which allows addresses corridors by Penn Avenue that you referenced. And we also have other programs called Local Share Accounts statewide. We do work with Wilkinsburg, with the manager there and other folks there who participate with me in submitting resources, a request for grants, for example, in those spaces that I told you about, LSA statewide program, multimodal, discretionary grants that we have the opportunity to. I work closely with Representative Salisbury, and we do joint efforts along those lines. But we have been making investments in parts of Wilkinsburg in terms of the roads, streets and roads, but we need an infusion of new revenue from the Commonwealth to be able to do that, and until we get a point along those lines. PennDOT has been a very good supporter of the changes and things we need to do on Penn Avenue, as that's a state road, and will continue to work with us going forward. But we didn't reduce any money, but we didn't add any additional money specifically for that, and we need to do that going forward. Thank you.
Thank you so much. We're going to continue to take a question or two from online, but first I want to remind everyone once more, even with just a few minutes left, we can still take your questions. If you want to press *3 on your keypad, we will get to your question if we can. Vaughn wanted to know, with so much outcry about data centers, what can be done about energy costs and the depleting water?
So the data centers and AI, and the data centers and the energy electricity generation facilities are really a major topic right now, and part of what the governor's been talking about in terms of his energy policy going forward. We need to make certain that we have to strike the right balance with respect to who's paying for the generation, new electric generation that's needed across Pennsylvania, how it's going to be deployed through these data centers, and how these data centers are going to be in a position to be working with AI development and deployment of AI through these data centers. So those are some of the things that we need to be doing. I think we've talked about it, and right now we figure we're going to be looking at some stuff as we go forward. One of the concerns about RGGI that we heard for years was referred to as RGGI was the anvil over the head of electric generation. And as we know, data centers require a tremendous amount of electricity, as to the utilization of AI and then also with the utilization of electric vehicles and the like. The need for electric generations is going to go through the roof. And that's why it's essential that we find a situation where Pennsylvania now needs to be able to consider building these electric generation locations to be able to build the electricity to be able to support along those lines. One of the questions we have to answer is who pays for the electric generation that's going to be done? These facilities will be built along those lines. And that's what we're trying to work through right now, figure out how that's going to work. A lot of other states have been building these facilities to be able to increase their capacity with regard to electricity. Pennsylvania is an exporter of electricity, but that may not be the status long if we don't catch up and do more along those lines. So we got to find a way to continue to be well-positioned in terms of generation, but also be mindful of the cost associated with who's going to pay for all that, particularly if it's for a single sort of entity users like data centers, what role they play in helping support the construction or what role state dollars play in that, but also recognizing that we have to look at the water utilization along those lines and also looking at whether or not how we're going to impact prices for consumers. We've got to find that balance, and I think that's the conversation that's taking place or really beginning to take place here in Harrisburg as we go forward.
Thank you so much, Senator. Next, we're going to go to Kiwanda in Wilkinsburg. Kiwanda, can you hear us?
Yes, I can, and thank you for your service, Senator Costa.
My question
is, in the budget, is there funding set aside to assist recently established home rule municipalities, such as Wilkinsburg, with grants to support community efforts in areas such as affordable housing and expanding small business opportunities?
So there are the latter piece about supporting small business grant, there's a small business development center that utilize resources. There are money we put in again this year for disadvantaged communities to be able to draw down grants along those lines. That's something the last several years that we've been able to look at and utilize. As it relates to money for the home rule charter support, that would need to be a grant that is the organization or entity or the district or the municipality would need to apply for through the Department of Community Economic Development. They have a broad PH Communities program, I think, that category that may fall under along those lines. But we did do some things in historically disadvantaged business assistance line program we developed a number of years ago during COVID. That still exists. That may be helpful to some businesses in Wilkinsburg and some other communities. But also Main Street Matters is another program that, again, the organizations can support or can apply for and be supportive of $20 million. And the Business PA program, as I mentioned earlier, $8 million for new programs to attract and retain businesses in PA. But as it relates to the Home Rule Charter, that and resources to support that, that would be something we need to talk to DCED about and see exactly what grant program they have available that would allow that request to be made or an application to be filed to try to draw down those resources. But there might be, there is money, I think, in that space that has to be applied for.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Next, we're going to go to Deanne in Shadyside. Deanne, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. I wanted to thank you, Senator Costa, for your continuing fight for a budget that reflects the morals of our country and how we should take care of one another. And I wanted to reinforce what you said about the need to simply replace the people that do not see the need to take care of the least of us and to take care of our issues. The behavior around the delay of the budget, which caused all municipalities and school districts to have funding problems, caused us not to be able to meet the needs of low-income families, and also the ultimate decision to really pit fossil fuels against green energy when even in China they work together. I think at this point the voters were very clear in November earlier that they don't want business as usual. They want to take care of one another. And I really hope to be able to help you to move toward a better Senate.
Well, thank you, Jeannie. And I know of your work in this space very much so. And I do agree. I think I'm going to be careful what I say here because I can't get too political or be political at all. But I think...
No, that's my job.
If we want things changed, if we're dissatisfied with some of the things that are taking place in Washington and we're dissatisfied with how things played out here and the choices that we had to make and the difficult choices, while we were successful in getting things in the budget, they came at a cost. And certainly the cost in this particular case was the Reggie situation. But on balance, I think things were there. But at the end of the day, voters have a choice. And I think I hope folks will be thoughtful in terms of if they want to end this type of situation we have here in this Commonwealth, consistently being having to defend against so many different things. Yeah, but by example, our House of Representatives, which is in the majority, has sent over in excess of 200 measures, 200 different bills that sit in the Senate and languish in the Senate and get no consideration whatsoever. That's wrong. We need to be considering bills on both parties, and it can't just be Republican bills that are considered in the Senate. And similarly, Democrat bills coming over here, sitting in the committee, and not being acted upon. So we have more work to do along those lines. And, I mean, voters have that choice to be able to make next November. But thank you, Jeannie. Thank you for your work all these years.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you so much. We're going to take one more question online. And with just a few minutes left, you can still call in with your question. If you want to press *3 on your keypad, we'll get to you if we can. Ellen online asks, is there any money to help Pittsburgh prepare for the NFL draft?
Yes, there is. There are a number of exciting opportunities here across the Commonwealth. Certainly in Pittsburgh, it's the NFL draft. Philadelphia region is going to be having the Major League Baseball All-Star Game. We're going to be celebrating the 250th anniversary of our country. And in addition to that, there's a major in soccer playoff going to be here. So the answer is yes. I believe there was $50 million put aside for all these different programs. We were able to allocate a minimum of $10 million for Pittsburgh and Allegheny County to help offset our costs, our associated costs with regard to overtime, for example, for the city of Pittsburgh, and helping to grow and build that event, so a successful event. That event will generate 10 times more than that in tax revenue and consumer spending in Pittsburgh and area. So that's a great opportunity for us to really shine and show people, show everybody the world who we are with regard to Pittsburgh and the amenities that we have and the things that are there. But it's also going to generate significant income for our region and for creating a tremendous economic impact for Pittsburgh region. So we felt it was important to provide resources to protect the people who are coming to that event and utilizing it for security purposes and helping the city of Pittsburgh offset some of their costs.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Senator. Next, we're going to go to Dorothy in Pittsburgh. Dorothy, can you hear us?
Yes, yes. First of all, thank you so much for all the work that you do, and thank you for the opportunity to be able to speak. My question is, are there any funding resources available for the work that we do for mental health individually and one-on-one, inclusive to the Mon Valley?
So I know that, as I mentioned earlier, there's resources both at the county level through the Department of Human Services, and it makes its way to Allegheny County's Human Service programs to be able to provide resources for mental health programming. And the county, through using state and federal money, to contract with mental health providers in the community. And that's where the Mon Valley community base would come in. I think the best place to look would be reaching the, so there is money there for that purpose. The question is, how is it allocated, or how do they regionally do it? We would have to check with the Allegheny County. Allegheny County, under Director Dalton, does a tremendous job in recognizing how important it is to provide services and meeting people where they are and what work needs to be done and helping navigate folks to the right places where they need to be. And I think they're going to continue to be able to do that. They've had great success in downtown Pittsburgh as it relates to that. The statistics demonstrate that. The governor was in Pittsburgh about 2 months ago talking about that. But there's other neighborhoods and areas of the region that need to see that similar type of activity take place, and we think that they're going to be able to do it. And there is money, as I mentioned, in the budget. As I mentioned to you, in addition to the school-based money for mental health programming, there's money for counties as well that allow for that type of activity to take place. But it's definitely a major need right now. We need to stay on top of it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dorothy.
Thank you.
Well, Senator Costa, any closing words for us?
Thank you all very much. I know there's a number of questions that need to be answered yet. We will follow up with folks and get answers to those questions. But I want to say thanks, folks, for participating this past hour and your interest in what we're doing and funding in terms of our budget. This is really important to us to have a feel for what's important to you and what you're looking for. You know, unfortunately, it took 5 months, and we apologize for that. But I think at the end of the day, it was a good product along those lines. I think that's what's important here. We're going to begin the process again in February. First week in February, the governor will be able to announce have his budget addressed. Some of the things that have been left undone, like transit and transportation, as I mentioned, maybe some money for direct care workers and some other things, the energy policy. I do believe that housing is going to be a big issue with the governor as well. All those things I think you will see as part of his initiatives as we move forward next year. And then our work is to be able to look through that budget process through our hearings and find a way to be able to incorporate them in the final budget product by June 30th. So thanks, everybody. Feel free to give our office a call if you have any questions you want to talk in more detail about or need more information about any specifics. But I want to say thank you. And if you didn't have a chance to ask your question, don't hang up. Hang on the line, and we'll get your questions captured, and then we'll respond to you with those answers to those questions going forward. Thanks again for everybody participating. I hope everybody has a wonderful and happy Thanksgiving, and look forward to seeing you back in the community soon. Thank you very much.